You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Ninety Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette.
And Jim.
Lisette is joining me remotely by the phone. She's in Uber space on her way to a very important trip. In any case, today we're talking about beliefs, emotions, and thoughts, their impact on response to stimulus. It seems sort of scientific, but what we want to talk about is how we think and how that changes how we act in certain situations, and is there a way that we can change that? So I'm going to actually put on the little bit of the title here, which is Beliefs, Emotions, and Thoughts, Impact on Response to Stimulus. A little bit of a course put on by Jim and Lisette at 90 Day Soulmate. So Lisette.
Yeah.
You know how there's like supposedly a certain number of standard emotions that people exhibit universally?
Yes, mostly something is a sadness, happiness, angry, disgust.
Uh-huh. Fear.
Fear.
Fear and shock. So I have them listed here on screen. Happiness, sadness, anger, fear, shock, disgust, and contempt. And why this is important is that these are universal, that the facial expressions for these emotions are the same in every culture, every ethnicity, across the planet, or around the planet. I guess it's no longer flat. I think we found that out recently, that the planet is round, or roundish. And these are universal facial expressions, or should I say these are emotions that have universal facial expressions. Why is this important? Why do you think this is important, Lisette?
Because it's the universal is in every culture and every place, and never mind the religion, or never mind the country, language, you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's universal.
So one of the reasons that this is so important is to understand that since we automatically have similar facial expressions as other cultures, it is a way to help us communicate, and it was an actual way to help us communicate when there wasn't much language. If you go back many, many years ago, before language became pervasive, before people spoke very well, before they were able to communicate very complex thoughts to someone else through language, there was grunts, right? Grunts and pointing and then clicks. And this evolved. The evolutionary psychology, which part of that is biology, is as language develops, it allows us to develop additional ways of communicating what we want to someone else, either through the truth, through a deception, through a lie, which brings us to all other sorts of shows that we'll have in the future. But emotions themselves are automatic emotional responses to contextual, meaning what's going on right now in that given situation, and salient meaning how strong is the situation. If it's a real tough confrontation from somebody, did a wild animal that you know could kill you come running at you, or is it a mouse? So a mouse runs at us and we might be scared, but we're not scared for our life. We just are scared. But if a giant bear came out of the woods, our body, our emotions change automatically. And this was something that's built into us through evolution.
And also, it's in the different context. So can be in business and relationship and family, you know. So
right.
That's for different contexts.
And we'll talk about that right now too, which is the universal emotions, the reactions we have to stimulus that have automatic and quick and fast response was to help us with quick assessment of situations and help us to prime us for flight, like run away or fight. There are other things that happen too. And Lizette, we talked about this a number of years ago, is that part of what fear does to you is it pulls blood away from your extremities, right? It takes it away from your arms and away from your legs and puts it to your core self. It puts it around your heart, around your organs, to help you stay in a survival mode. And these types of responses, which are really helpful for survival maneuvers without the need for thinking, get in the way today with such a complex society.
Yeah.
So what we say, it's more complicated today. So some of the things that complicate it today is that these evolutionary traits that were developed over a million years are no match for social media and the complexity of today's world. That we have had so much technology and innovation in a very, very short period of time that what caused us and helped us survive over the years is not able to help us survive in these given situations. These automatic reactions are completely different. And we apologize. We had a little bit of feedback going on from the Uber space, the space vehicle. But we were talking about how emotions don't fit with today's society. And that was part, you know, what was going on right now is I was personally getting a little frustrated because there was something out of my control that I had no control over. And that was noise from the Uber space. Uber space being
what emotion you have when you say
frustration. But if you look,
that is noise.
I know. But what is frustration? It's a little bit of anger, right? Anger is frustration, and it's anger with the inability to do anything about it sometimes. So frustration can be when we have no control over a situation.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So we were reviewing some of the traits and how the evolutionary traits are no match for the quick technological advances, the communication advances, people traveling around the world. Now, different languages being translated very quickly, almost instantly, where people are able to communicate with each other. And the inputs that we receive today are so overwhelming that nature, over millions of years of evolution, never prepared us for this type of input. So we have a little work to do. So these...
Yeah, and also I know that you prepared pretty good. So what did you have right now?
Right now I have nothing on screen. I'm just talking. I will bring up the points again because I do want to bring over this other thing where we're talking about the evolutionary traits. Part was... These traits, these automatic traits, these responses, these emotional responses were developed to help people interact with each other when people had limited ability to communicate. So if you go through the forest and you meet a new group of people and you have no language in common, but you have a smile in common, you have anger in common, you have sadness in common, you can at least begin to work side by side with them. If you are both working for a common good, you can start to read each other. And when you only have a few little things that you need to do, like share food, be safe when you sleep, and not kill each other, these quick emotions, and also run away from tigers, you know, these things help. So when minute-to-minute survival depended upon a quick read of the situation, these emotions, these things that we see on our face, how we act in these situations, and how our body, the physio and chemical, the chemical and physical changes that occur when these emotions happen, are there for survival. And again, I think Lizette said earlier, they're there for survival, but they may not do us right in these complex situations. They may not be the best in these complex situations we're in now. Is that true?
That is true.
So we...
I agree with you.
You agree. But if you think of it this way, that we are just cavemen, cavewomen, that have been brought into this technologically advanced society, and although we have some education, our thoughts that are based upon what we learned may be newer, but our physical being and our chemical being that reacts to the given situation is not up to date. It's like an old program that...
Yeah.
Our body is programmed to react based upon a non-existent world today. The world today is a virtual world, a fake world, a not real world. And I don't mean that, what I'm saying, compared to running out into the woods and trying to figure out how to survive, today's world has no meaning to our bodies and our automatic reactions to stimulus. So what we want to talk about is, I want to bring up karate, Lizette. Your brother is like a fourth degree black belt.
Yeah, he's, I have to know, yesterday he had the test for his five level.
So, so he's on to his fifth degree black belt. He's been teaching for many, many years, ever since you were a young...
42 years, so something like that, yeah.
He's been teaching for 42 years. He's went for a test for his fifth degree black belt. Very strict, regimented, focused, follow the teachings of his sensei. I don't know if they call it, do they call them grandmaster? What do they call the head of that organization?
The sensei and the teacher, the chief, is the top.
Okay. So why I will bring up the karate thing for a moment here. And this is a picture of karate. And what karate does is, and let's go back to what humans supposedly, how we are different from animals. You know, we do have that animal part, but the quote, biggest difference is the amount of thought that occurs between the stimulus of a situation and our response. What karate tries to do is program your body to react to given stimulus without having to think. So if I remember correctly, there was something that I was taught, or at least the philosophy was, no mind. You should have no mind. And that is...
What does that mean?
That if somebody goes to punch you, you shouldn't have to think, oh, I see the punch coming. Now what I want to do is block like this. What you want to do is program your body to automatically respond without you having to think, and it reduces the reaction time. So,
you're right.
I'm right. Thank you, baby. So I'm going to go back to the idea of this whole thing, though, is to overwrite your thought system and go, listen, in this case, if in a martial art, if I'm learning martial art for survival, or I'm learning it for tournament, or I'm learning it for fighting, or for whatever the reason, is that we want to remove our thinking ability to have us react quicker, which, again, the quick reaction is for survival. It's also to help us in a given situation without having to delay what we do by thinking. But if you're reading something on Facebook, on Twitter, on LinkedIn, on... what's that other one called? Instagram. That if we just all responded to everyone's posts immediately without thinking. Oh, wait, that's what we do today, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
The idea is that a lot of us have gone through phases of being upset about what someone has written and then immediately responding back, and then all of a sudden it's now posted for everyone to see, and then you realize you overreacted and you got to delete what you responded with. And so Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, I think at some point has all of them, they've created more problems between people because they haven't been thinking before responding. And it's not a matter of survival. Like, if you were responding without thinking and it was helping you survive, that's one thing. But all it's doing is it's giving, you know, it's an emotional response without thinking. That has nothing to do with why we have these emotional responses. We've learned and trained ourselves to emotionally respond quickly to things that we shouldn't. Today, why does that no longer work? Because it's much more complex today, right? So I have the picture up right now, which says response moderators. When we're talking about thinking before responding, our thoughts are based upon our family, where they came from, the culture we grew up in, our beliefs, if they're religious or otherwise, if you take martial arts, what you've been trained to believe or learn. Socially, who you hang out with, your friends, what they talk about, what you have grown to accept. Education, what courses have you taken, what's your background, how complex is your thinking about different things, if it's scientific, if it's history. And then also just general knowledge. What do you know about life in general? And all these things are now creating our thoughts that give our reaction. So they moderate our thoughts. So they moderate our reaction to stimulus or whatever the situation is. This is really in depth, and there's a whole reason for doing it. And I want to go to Lizette. If you were a wolf in the woods,
uh-huh.
And now I'm going to show the picture of the wolf. The wolf is almost a pure reactor, to stimulus. They're the lone wolf. They don't really hang out with others. They don't read social media. They don't go to school. They're born and they very quickly learn to hunt and survive. And evolution has tailored how they respond. Their capabilities are based upon their body and physically what they can do, their teeth, how quick they are. They're geared towards what do I need to do to survive. There's not like, what clothes should I wear? What fragrance should I wear? It's stimulus and response. And that is a pure reactor. And I wanted to just start there and stop there for the moment, because that is the animal that's inside all of us, a pure reactor, that we react to stimulus without having to think. That is in us for some things we do. And like we talked about with karate and we talked about thinking, these are ways to moderate what our responses are. But deep down, there's something in us that wants to push us to reacting, to responding without thinking.
Yeah.
And with that, we'll be back right after this message with 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette and Jim, although Lizette is now officially off for the rest of the show. She is unable to speak without too much noise in the background, so we are going to finish this show up by myself. I'll be very sad and not as funny or have as much good conversation, but we'll continue on. So we were talking about the different levels of reaction to stimulus.
We started off with the lone wolf, the wolf who's out there on their own in the woods somewhere, and they're acting almost purely on instinct. They've been contoured and built for survival over millions of years or thousands of years or whatever it's been. They've been working towards the concept of, what do I need to do to survive? Hunt, eat, live. The wolf has capabilities based upon its body structure, its ability to run quick, to tear at flesh with its teeth, to survive in cold weather. It has that big fur on top of it. So its evolution has made it what it is today. It sees food. If it's hungry, it goes after the food and tries to get it. So let's go to the next thing here. The next is what we want to call the reactor plus. So let's take that wolf, and that wolf has been domesticated. I think science talks about how wolves became dogs, and that's not necessarily true. DNA testing has shown that dogs and wolves are not, dogs are not directly related to wolves, but they supposedly come from a common ancestor. That being said, dogs are different from wolves for a number of reasons. One is that dogs have been bred for size, for shape, for temperament, what they're capable of doing. Are they there for herding sheep? Are they to go down holes and pull rats out of holes? Are they there for protection? Are they there just to be cute and sit on your lap and yap? Are they there to bite the UPS man? So they're bred for different reasons. They're trained. They have the experience of the household they've grown up in, whether that is your household, someone else's household. Do they have kids? Do they not have kids? Are there other dogs, other pets? That they're a lot of what they have is inborn to them, that it's innate, it's evolution, but there's all this other stuff that comes with living in a human society and being treated as sometimes children, sometimes a part of the family. But there's a lot of training that goes on that wouldn't be seen in the wild. The litter, did they grow up with other little puppies? And when they grew up with those little puppies, did they have to fight for food? Did they have an aggressor in the pack of their little siblings? Were they having to protect what's theirs? Did they have to, we said, fight for food? So there is stimulus response, but there's been training. And if you remember the guy with the bell, Pavlov, who trained the dogs to salivate at the sound of the bell, he utilized what was innate to a dog. Dogs salivating when food was in front of them, a natural occurring thing for animals, probably humans too. You go to a nice restaurant, you're going to salivate. Here's the food. Oh, you're getting ready to eat it. The dog did that. Pavlov, if you remember, every time they brought the bowl of food out, he'd ring a bell. He did that for a certain amount of time, and then he could ring the bell without the food, and the dog would salivate. So we can train ourselves, animals, others, to react to other things similarly to how we would act innately. Let's talk about some of the bad stuff that happens there. Marketing. What does marketing do? They try to associate emotions that we feel innately for things. Maybe as humans, we find certain things attractive. Well, we see something attractive. Let's say it's another human being, attractive, and they're next to a car, a can of Coke or Pepsi, next to a fragrance, and we associate, oh, I'm attracted, I'm quote, aroused to this thing. And now I see this thing, I associate the two. It's like that bell ringing. I see that thing when I'm at the store, and now somehow I'm emotionally connected to it, where I really was only emotionally connected to Michael Jackson when he was performing on stage. But he started holding Pepsi, and now I want to get Pepsi because it's the king of all Pepsi, the king of pop. Any case. So the reactor plus is a trained response that is based off of what is natural or innate. So we talk about people who are reactors. Let's talk about people who are reactors. We all know that certain friend of ours who seems to not think before they do anything, whether it's they're at the store and they immediately buy something, they're in a group of friends and they just say what comes right off the top of their head, they're not really thinking. And why I say the reactor plus, a lot of that is based upon, oh, who I am, how I grew up. A lot of that is inborn and innate, but a lot of it is the environment in which they grew up and how they don't think, but they act because that's how they learn to do it. So the reactor plus, we know the person who reacts without thinking, they're sometimes seem not to be that human. But the thing that separates us humans from animals is the thinking piece before we react. So stimulus, thought, response. Lizette and I used to teach this piece. It was part of a training course that we would teach, it was part of actually training people to train. It was train the trainer. And you would talk to people about the difference between how animals just stimulus response, but when you're training people, you're trying to put thoughts in their head that cause a different reaction. So if you're training salespeople and they come across a situation, rather than them just reacting how they would because that's how they grew up or that's how they were born, you try to give them certain skills, certain ways of speaking, certain stories, certain presentations that they then substitute for a typical reaction. And now they have a response or reaction that's based upon thought, thinking of what is the best way to respond and giving the tools to respond. That is what we would call the thinker. The thinker is somebody who does put a lot of thought into their response. Maybe they don't get as heated or angry or sad or happy, and they're a little bit more reserved. Maybe they are as happy. Maybe they're as fun as anyone else, but they don't react drastically. They think before they respond. The amount of thought we have before we respond gives us control over the situation. A lot of what you hear today also, if anyone has read something about emotional intelligence is to read the situation, the emotion of the situation, and then decide on the best approach to control the situation emotionally to have the best outcome for the people involved. And so emotional intelligence is beneficial to all that are involved, not just to yourself. It's not selfish. It's not narcissistic. Not being a narcissist, not being psychopathic, it's emotional intelligence is for the benefit of people. So again, the thought before you respond gives you a certain amount of emotional intelligence. But is what I'm thinking, are the thoughts that I have the right thoughts? If I choose something that I have learned, and this is how I'm going to respond, you know, is that really, which thought is good? And maybe I'll assess, maybe I'll observe. We talk a little bit or a lot about auto-observation or self-observation. Part of the thinking process and stimulus response is being able to observe what our thoughts are when we have a stimulus, and it gives us more time to think, but it also gives us more time to think about what we want to do and how we want to change our thoughts to react a different way. So if we immediately get angry, why am I angry? Should I be angry in this situation? Is it really something that I shouldn't be angry with? I have no control over. I'm just frustrated. Let it go. Don't get too upset. Calm down. Regroup. And then act appropriately. That would be what we call the observer, the person who's able to observe the thoughts they're having before they respond. So it's almost a secondary level of human. So if we were to put these things in dimensions, one-dimensional human acts stimulus response, they act like an animal. Two-dimensional is somebody who does think in between the stimulus and response. They actually think like a human. The third level or third dimension is somebody who thinks about their thoughts. Oh, maybe I should have this other thought, or maybe I should have this other thought. And these thoughts are based upon what they already know. So they assess how they are thinking, and then they react differently, but they're able to think about their thoughts. How am I thinking? We call it auditing a thought or observing your thoughts. Next and last, and there could, you could go be well beyond this. You could have thinking about thoughts, but we're not going to go there. What we're going to go to is somebody we call the coder. The coder not only audits the thoughts, but actively seeks new ways of responding, new programs, new knowledge. I have thoughts, but maybe my thoughts that I have, I'm thinking about it, I'm auditing them. As I audit my thoughts, I'm thinking, maybe I don't have enough information to be able to actually respond appropriately. If you've ever been asked a question and you try to answer it and you're going, you know what? I don't know the answer. Let me go actually find the answer before I respond. How many people run into people when you say, did the UPS truck come yet today? And they say, yeah, I think so. They're like, well, it did or it didn't. It's not you think it did it or didn't it? So when you are able to look at something from a standpoint of, did I answer the question? Do I have enough information to answer the question? Do I have enough information to respond and respond adequately? That's thinking about your thoughts. And not only thinking about your thoughts, but saying, do I need to change something now so I can respond appropriately? Beyond that, the coder looks for new information, new education, associations, looks for new ways of dealing with things. They'll go to a training course. They'll read a book. They'll listen to an audio tape. They'll go on YouTube and watch some TED Talks. They'll watch our show or listen to our show because you can get the most information here out of our show. Now, we're one source for information on relationships, on psychology, on how people interact with each other. We've talked about Disney movies and other movies and how that's changed how we react and how we think as we get older. So the coder actively seeks ways to react differently. The coder looks for new programs, and that's why we call it the coder. These are words that we use. Lizette and I in 90 Day Soulmate have coined the phrase coder, as that is what we hope to encourage you all to become. That's what Lizette and I are. When we don't know something, when we first got into this whole thing about writing books, and you probably all remember this story about 90 Day Soulmate. We talk about it a lot. But when we first wrote this book, Lizette and I were interviewed on a psychology show. There were two doctors in psychology, and they interviewed us and were asking questions. And at the time, I'm an engineer. I've got a business degree as well, engineering degree. Lizette has education and business and information degrees. But we have limited psychology. And that prompted me, and I'll call me as a coder, is going, I don't know this. I want to know this because I want to know that I'm actually answering questions in a way that is appropriate for the given situation. You know, is the information in this book? Yes, the psychologist we spoke about said that they agreed with what we wrote in the book, which gave us a little pat on the back. But we wanted to understand more about the human nature, more about evolution, more about evolutionary psychology, more about all the psychologists out there and what they've learned. So I went and took my doctorate education in industrial and organizational psychology. Lizette and I started doing radio podcasts because we were interested in the subject and wanted to learn more by reading research papers and sharing that with our audience. We learned more on how to help better ourselves as well as those we're trying to help. Getting our story out, writing other books, it allows us to have better information, new knowledge. We're seeking new programs in order to help ourselves help others. And that is what we're saying. Be a lifelong learner. You probably heard that, lifelong learner. It will help you, help those around you, and give you a better outcome, different outcome than you could have without the same information. Knowledge. I always ask my kids this. I say, will this decision limit your future or open up more options for the future? If you have a choice between two things, does it limit what you can do in the future or does it open up more options for what you do in the future? When you do something that limits your future, you know, okay, I'm not going to go to school. Why? Because I don't know if this is the school for me. Rather than, you know what, I'm not sure this is a school for me, but I'm going to go to this school because I want to learn something. And even if this turns out not to be the school for me or not the education or not the training course or I learned welding and I don't want to be a welder, I've learned a skill. I've created new brain matter, you know, plasticity, neuroplasticity. We will grow our brains. We grow our brains. They have more pathways to give us different outcomes, different thoughts. This is why being a coder, or what being a coder means. Let's see if we've got another thing here. So in comparison of the four different types we spoke about, we have the reactor, immediately reacts to stimulus, not much any thought in there other than the programming they've received as a child or in their environment, culture, or religion. We've got the thinker who thinks, takes a moment, thinks, what do they know, and then reacts and does their action. The observer who looks at what they're thinking to the stimulus and goes, is this the appropriate thought for this? It's almost thinking about the way they're thinking. And it allows somebody to choose another thought path that they already have to have a different outcome. So it's when we're talking again about emotional intelligence, it's like that piece. It's I'm thinking about it this way. This is how I feel. This is how the situation feels. If I react this way instead, this is how the outcome will be. So it's thinking about thinking. And then again, the coder is I think about thinking, realize I don't have enough information. I don't have enough knowledge. I don't have enough experience. So I want to seek new information. I want to create new programs. I want to have new pathways of coming up with different results, different actions, and different outcomes. What increases my ability to make better decisions rather than what limits it? This helps in communication, in relationships, in work environment, in dealing with the person who knocks on your door. Having more of an ability to communicate with more people on more subjects increases opportunity rather than stops opportunity from growing. We will be back, and more like I will be back, after this message on 90 Day Soulmate. Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. So today we're talking about beliefs. I want to go back to the beginning of this just to get the exact title here, that beliefs, emotions, and thoughts, and how they impact the response to stimulus. It sounds really complicated. I probably threw too many words in there, but basically it is how our own beliefs, emotions and thoughts, the things we think about and the things we believe, our values, how all those things impact our responses to the situations we're in. It causes us to act and react. And we're going to, you know, when I first met Lizette, I used to tell her, I'm not going to change. Meanwhile, we've moved a couple of times. We've traveled a lot more than ever before. We've written books. I continue to go to school. We did a lot of different things. We start working out and doing new things. We rebuilt our basement in our house. Lizette and I did by hand, so we refinished it. That we do all these things, and you say, I'm not going to change. And then all of a sudden, you know, 10 years later, you've changed. But that was a misperception on my point, is that I always thought I was a certain way. And I think the way I was maybe ever changing. So I'm never changing from changing all the time. And if you're involved in companies today, you're involved in the world today, what do we know is that change continues. Everything changes, from the internet to technology, to how big the iPhone is, to how small it is, to how many colors are on the Motorola phone, if that even exists anymore, Android. All these phones have, I have the power of I have the power of any spaceship now in a phone, where if you ever remember the first rockets that flew to the moon, they had literally no computer help. They had the amount of technology that was on a washing machine from the 1990s, something that could do a few things, but the amount of technology was really low. Today, we have we have supercomputers, and we carry them with us, and we use them for anything but supercomputing. We use them for posting TikTok videos and doing podcasts and doing things like this. So going back to beliefs, emotions, and thoughts and their impact on response to stimulus, we talked about the emotions themselves: happiness, sadness, anger, fear, shock, disgust, and contempt. And how these emotions have been shown. Dr. Paul Ekman had done studies on these emotions and had traveled around the world and gone into different environments with different peoples, looked at them, looked at how they reacted to different things that went on in their community, did studies. His career was based on this in a large part, how being happy and showing happiness, sadness and showing sadness, anger and showing anger, fear, shock, which is similar to fear in many ways, but without the scare, disgust, and contempt. How these are literally muscle by muscle facial expression the same from culture to culture, ethnicity to ethnicity around the globe. No matter where you are, where you grow up, that humans react this way. And why this is important is that it gives us an understanding of that we're programmed without even spending a day on Earth. That if this is automatic wherever we are, it's not cultural. It's not the religion that you grow up in. That having these emotions is something that's inborn. And knowing that, we then know that our reactions to situations that give us these emotions, why should we have any emotion over anything that happens? If we were a computer and we were just watching things going on and just taking in the information, would a computer have emotions over it? Why this is important is we have to understand what emotions are. Emotions are survival tools that have been implanted in us and are across the globe the same for all of humanity. And in fact, a lot of these things where you see somebody angry and they're like, "Argh," well, animals do that. They bare their teeth. They tense their facial muscles. That even outside the human species, other species have similar traits that humans do. Not as maybe many, not as complex, not for the same reasons. My internet's down. Woof, woof, woof. You don't hear dogs getting all upset about that. But the reason this is so important, again, is that we naturally assess situations based upon evolutionary psychology and biology and how we have been made as survival of the fittest, or just survival of the species, that happiness, sadness, anger, fear, shock, disgust, and contempt are all part of us. And the only reason they're part of us is that it's allowed us to survive, which means these emotions are survival things. They're not really real in the sense of a situation shouldn't be making you happy or sad. So you got to look at, why does a situation make me happy? Something that's good for me, something where I'm with other people. When I say, well, what's good for me? Someone gave me food. Oh, I'm now feeding myself. I don't know if you've ever been hungry and angry. You know, that hangry, that feel where you start to eat and you feel better and you actually feel like emotionally you tie that to, I'm happy now that I ate, and I'm angry when I'm not eating. What does anger do? It makes you want to kill something and eat it. So you would understand why if you're hungry, you might be getting angry. I'm not saying that's what it does today as much, because we do have other programs that are built, but this is the basis of design of the human being. Fear. I want to be fearful of certain things. Things that, like, should we be fearful of spiders? Well, if a lot of spiders are poisonous and they bite, maybe that's a natural thing to be fearful of. Do we want to, you know, something that smells bad, we're, ew, that's disgust. Someone sees the disgust on our face as we eat something, they're not going to eat it. Maybe we just saved their life. Maybe these things are things that caused us through evolution to survive. So that, again, that's the happiness, sadness, anger, fear, shock, disgust, contempt. There are all these other things. We talked about frustration before, which I said was anger without being able to do anything about it. It got me frustrated. I think happiness and not able to do anything about it would keep me happy. I'm happy. I can't do anything about it. It's pretty good. So I wanted to go into this in detail because I just want to resolve today's show with talking specifically again about these emotional responses and facial expressions were innate to us or are innate to us because they were useful in having us survive as a species. That is the reason they're there. So when politicians, when people, when bosses, when friends, when marketing use these innate emotions that were there for us to survive and coerce us and manipulate us to do things, we have to understand that if we're feeling an emotion, it's probably someone trying to manipulate us. And maybe it's in a good way. Manipulate for your own good. I want to make you happy. You want to laugh? Great, laugh. I'm manipulating you to laugh, but you realize the person's doing it for your own good. That's great. Someone manipulating you to buy something you don't really need, or to vote in a certain way you don't need to vote, or, you know, we talked about marketing, show up to work at 6 a.m. every day because, you know, you're scared that you're going to lose your job, you're fearful. That when we get triggered by these natural occurring emotions, these emotions will drive us to act in certain ways that if we sat back, took in the actual situation, analyzed it, we could have different reactions. And again, today is so much more complicated with social media, with the ability to communicate across the globe with all sorts of cultures. The reason it's complicated is that because in the development of language, we've developed schools of thought, we've developed religions, we've developed political beliefs, social beliefs, we've developed things that have complicated human beings. They're much more complicated today than they were when it was, I need clothing, I need food, I need shelter. You know, those basic things. If you need, you know, my wife always tells me that when somebody's unhappy, when somebody's depressed, all they need to do is go to a country where there's hardly any food, you have to work your tail off to survive, and you stop thinking about how unhappy you are because you have to keep moving, you have to work. You don't think as much. You know, maybe you're still unhappy because it's hard work, but you may stop thinking about silly stuff like they have a pair of pants that are designer pants and I don't, so I'm unhappy about it. So it puts life in perspective when you have certain demands on you that are survival demands. But the complications that now exist with family, culture, beliefs, society, education, knowledge, where people are, where they're located, the ability for us to communicate back and forth between different languages, where, again, if you remember those icebergs that were, that those are icebergs there, by the way, with the things below it, and that we communicate above the ice, above the water, where the iceberg's above the water, that's where we're communicating. So we think we're having actual communication, but when we don't take into account all those things down below, when we don't understand, seek understanding of the person, understand where they come from, again, the book 90 Day Soulmate, there's checklists in there. There's things to fill out that help you and your partner, you and somebody else, understand more about yourself in order to have that deeper communication where you don't have as much emotional reaction because you can analyze the situation better with an understanding of who that person is as well as who you are, which allows you to think before you respond, allows you to think about your thoughts, and should hopefully allow you to become a coder, understand what you don't know, where you want to get more information, and how to learn more about the things that will help you in your life. The point is, the more control you have, the more calm you are. When you lose control, when you don't have control, you can get angry, you can get fearful, frustrated. Again, we talked about frustration being anger without control. The more able you are to control your own destiny, the less frustrated you are, the happier you'll be. Thank you for listening to 90 Day Soulmate. Thank you for continuing your own education, and hope you continue on your path of being the best darn coder there is.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.